inna the punk rock fashion. No DJ dem a have a for the moon style. Some a wonder that a dem, some a come follow me, and some a dem a say.
The Lollipop Guild only listens to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM.
Creating opportunities, fighting poverty, changing lives. For almost 50 years, Community Action of Greene County has proudly served our community, providing education, tools, and advocacy for those in need. Services range from emergency services, food pantry, housing and homelessness assistance, and weatherization in Greene County, to domestic violence and Wheels for Work programs in both Greene and Columbia counties. Our Pay It Forward Community Thrift Store generates income to support our programs. For more information, to donate, to volunteer, or if you are in need of services, please visit us at www.cagcny.org or dial 943-9205.
The Wavefarm app is now in the App Store for users to download. It's only available on iPhones and iPads. An Android version of the app will be developed as soon as funding allows. The Wavefarm app allows users to listen to live audio from any of the Wavefarm web streams, including WGXC 90.7 FM, Standing Wave Radio, which was formerly known as Wavefarm Radio, Quintron's Weather Warlock, Zach Poff's Pond Station, and other partner streams. Users may also create custom playlists from the thousands of archived audio files. Wavefarm transmit partners and WGXC broadcast partners may now also stream their own audio feeds from their iPhones and iPads using the app. Again, you can go into the App Store and search for Wavefarm Radio.
Underwriting support is provided by Tobacco Free Action of Columbia and Greene Counties, working to protect children from tobacco marketing in stores. The more kids see, the more likely they are to smoke. To learn more and find out how you can help, visit www.seenenoughtobacco.org.
I'll have some clam chowder followed by beefsteak on rye, pumpkin pie, whipped cream and coffee. I want a green salad on the side. Don't forget the french fries, pizza pie.
This is Eating It in the Hudson Valley, and I'm Phyllis Segura, your host. Good morning. Oh, no, good afternoon. It's 2 o'clock. It's our Radio Everywhere Spring Pledge Drive, and I want you to go to the phone right now and dial 518-697-7400 or go online to wgxc.org/donate and pledge your support to WGXC. I am Phyllis Segura, and I'm a volunteer programmer here at WGXC. I'm joined by Neva Fortell. See, it says a pledge partner name, and I'm not really good at filling these things in. And she's another, no, she's not a volunteer. She's a staff member. And we're so, she's also a volunteer. She does it all. And we're excited to be here on Eating It in the Hudson Valley today to share with you why it's so important to support this vital community resource, WGXC 90.7 FM, hands-on creative community radio. Ooh, careful with those noises there. Ooh, we got Rebecca with her little box of goodies. Today, I'm speaking with two producers of local food. Sauerkraut Seth is here. And Rebecca...
Shim.
Put your headphones on, darling. And of Phoenicia Honey. I've used that honey. And Sauerkraut Seth. And we're going to talk to both of them. And we're hoping that you are going to send us some money while all this is happening. We'll come in and out with our news and with our story about why you should give money and help WGXC stay on the air because you love us. And you might have heard about Seth either as a musician with the Y.O.s.
That's correct.
Or as the creator of Hawthorne Valley Farms lacto-fermented vegetables. I'm certain he's told this story many times, but I've never heard it, and maybe some of you haven't either. What with gut food so healthfully popular these days, he may be something of a local treasure. Have you been called that?
That's the first time I've heard that.
But, oh, well, good. Always good to be the first. When did all this start and how? Let's find out.
Well, it's true. I did work at Hawthorne Valley Farm in Ghent, or Harlemville, New York, technically, I was a farm apprentice, and there was some extra cabbage the first year that I was there. And one thing led to another, and next year I made 1,200 pounds of sauerkraut, and the following year I made 3,000 pounds.
How did you know how to do it? I mean,
just trial and error. I mean, I'd grown up in New York, in Queens, New York. That was 1999.
So that was ahead of the curve.
Yeah, in this sort of renaissance of lacto-fermented foods. I mean, they've always been around. Anyone from Eastern, even Western Europe, sauerkraut is something that has been made traditionally.
In the bathtub, usually.
Yeah, or on the front porch, or in the basement, hopefully. Yeah. But nevertheless, there was some extra cabbage. I made a few experiments. They turned out really well.
Well, you saw the cabbage and you said, let's make sauerkraut?
It was just sitting in the refrigerator and nobody was really using it. It wasn't selling at the market. So I just went and made some sauerkraut with it.
Uh-huh. And then what happened?
Well, then the next year I made quite a bit more.
Uh-huh.
And by the time I left Hawthorne Valley in 2011, 2012, we were making 300,000 pounds. Does that make sense?
A lot of it. It was selling.
300 barrels.
Wow, that's a lot of sauerkraut.
I'm sorry. It was probably close to 100,000 pounds of cabbage. Now Hawthorne Valley must be doing, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of pounds of cabbage.
But with that first batch, what happened? They put it in a jar and.
Well, no. I was working there at the time, so the first batch was just an experiment. The second year, we marketed it in the farm store and down at the Union Square Farmers Market. I ended up leaving Hawthorne Valley in 2012 and starting my own brand, but now I am working with them in their new facility in Hudson. So my brand is being made there, as well as the Hawthorne Valley brand, as well as a company called Poor Devil Hot Pepper. They make hot sauces.
Oh, so when you left there, you decided to make your own.
See, I'm a musician. How different is it than the Hawthorne? Well, I have different flavors.
Okay.
I have a lot of experience doing it, so I kind of have my own take on it.
Sure. This one, there's a jar here on our desk called Raw Sour Pickles Sauerkraut, and it looks like it's got pickles in it.
It was fermented with fresh cucumbers, fresh dill, and fresh garlic.
Nice.
And cabbage, of course. And so the end result is kind of a cross between your Lower East Side pickle and sauerkraut.
Uh-huh. You're not on Essex Street anymore.
Really? Yeah, I haven't been down in a while.
No, it's not the same.
Bubby's sauerkraut.
Bubby's, yeah, a nickel for a pickle.
That was a long time ago.
Right, it was. And we are still in our pledge drive. I'm going to say the phone number. I'm speaking with Sauerkraut Seth and Rebecca from Phoenicia Honey. And the phone number is 518-697-7400. Show us a little love and donate. Right, Neva?
That's right, Phyllis.
That's right. That's that song. That's right. The woman is smarter than the man in every way. That's right. That won't help our donation cause, no, but it just popped into my mind. And you know, sometimes when something pops into your mind,
it's got to come out.
And yeah,
it's going to come out somehow.
Not always a good thing. Let's just play a little couple of notes on that, get it out of the way. There we go. And a little sound effect. Yay!
Okay.
Good.
Got that done.
What are we going to do now? We're going to talk to Rebecca for a minute and get back to Seth. Rebecca, you're the queen bee at Phoenicia Honey.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, she is. And it's another local and healthy product. We've got these two great products today, I mean, that are coming, you know, that are just so great for everyone's health. But it looks as though everything is made in small batches.
It's all small batch.
But what does that mean to a bee? A small batch.
Not a lot, no. Right? Because a bee takes a lot of flowers and a lot of bees to make a little honey.
Right.
So I don't know what small batch means to a bee. Yeah. I know what it means to me.
Tell.
Is that I'm still sort of at the very early phases, and I'm involved in everything, in every aspect of the operation.
Uh-huh.
Like ideally growing herbs to infuse and infusing them, harvesting honey.
What's the sort of list of the products? So it's not your straight out honey.
So we have eight different varieties. Trying to make less. So, for example, we have an Earl Grey, which is infused with organic Earl Grey tea.
Oh, with the tea?
Yes.
Okay. So, not with the bergamot.
The tea has bergamot in it. So we add a little bit of extra bergamot. We also do a chocolate-infused honey that has bergamot in it.
Ooh.
So that's really nice.
Wow.
And they can be used to, drizzle on things, sweetening tea.
Yes.
They're great on toast.
Yes.
They're all really different.
Uh-huh.
So it kind of depends on.
So
what
they all have honey and a flavor.
Yes.
There isn't one that's like a straight out like.
I mean, I do. We always have wildflower honey available.
Do. Yes. Yeah.
But our signature is the infusions.
The infusion.
Because it sort of takes the honey to a different level.
Sure.
You get the sweetness of the honey, but you get this other flavor that kind of hits you at the end.
I think I've got one with ginger.
Yeah, we have a ginger orange.
Ginger orange, that's the one. Yeah,
and that one's really great for cooking. You can use it as a finishing sauce on, say, a salmon teriyaki or barbecue chicken.
Right,
kind of drizzled on at the end.
Nice. And you're also a chef.
I am.
Tell us about that.
Well, I've been cooking for probably 30 years. Professionally.
Where?
Oh, I've been eating longer than that.
Yeah.
I mean, I had a couple restaurants in the city before moving up here.
You did?
The restaurant was called New City Cafe. It's one of the first restaurants in Fort Greene before the whole
Brooklyn Renaissance.
And then we moved across from Brooklyn Academy of Music and had a place there called New City Bar and Grill for a couple of years.
I remember that.
Yeah, and then I wanted to be near the food. So I was going to do a summer on a farm just to see it all from the other side, and I kind of never left.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I ended up, in the mountains permanently.
So you decided to leave the city 17 years ago.
Yeah.
And how did you come to making honey? What was your first flash of the possibility of doing that?
Well, I got some bees because I was really interested in helping the bee population, and wanting to have chickens and bees and a garden and all the things that you hopefully do in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then my friend Alyssa is actually the founder of the business originally. And she was like, I want to go do something else. You have bees. Why don't you take it over? So that's sort of how it evolved, kind of accidentally.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a great accident because I love food. I love everything that has to do with being outside. So, the bees and the flowers and eating.
So you have
it's
a farm?
Sort of interconnected.
Essentially, it's a farm?
I would like it to be a farm.
Uh-huh.
It's right now really just me and my husband. So it's kind of sort of a small apiary.
Right.
And eventually we'd like to expand it. And
do people come visit?
Not really.
No.
We're not really at that phase yet. We have a lot of flower gardens, and I'm always buying more stuff to plant and then trying to plant it. But, we are the staff, so it's just evolving.
Great. And how long have you been bottling the honey?
About 2 years.
That's all?
Yeah.
Oh, and it's gotten around, though. I've seen it in a lot of places.
Well, it started in 2014.
Okay.
So I've been doing it since 2016.
Yeah, and what's the reception?
People love it.
They love it, yeah.
I mean,
it's a nice label.
The foodies.
Right.
If you love food, it's really, if you like honey, then it's really easy and exciting.
Yes. Yeah, I just had a visitor who drank so much honey, a whole jar of it. I gotta get a refill before he comes back.
Yeah, people are learning, how important, just like the lacto-fermented food, people are realizing honey is really good for you.
Uh-huh. So. Well, I've always recommended that people have honey, or people who have hay fever, if they eat the local honey, they eat the local pollen.
Right.
Do you collect the pollen in that way and sell it?
Well, we don't harvest it for sale, no.
Right.
We don't. Our apiary is too small.
Mm.
And again, it's all like labor. Like we scrape off the propolis and I'll maybe make a little tincture for my family.
Right.
But, you know, we're not at that level.
Right, right.
It's really hard to keep bees right now. So
tell us.
If we can get through a winter, we're lucky.
Really?
Last winter, we lost all of our hives because the weather is crazy. And I mean, there's no easy answer. Nobody really has the answer of why the bees are having such a hard time. But even, you know, the seasoned beekeepers that have been doing this for 40 years are complaining. So everybody just needs to be a little more conscious of their footprint, and hopefully more people are keeping bees just for fun, and it'll get better.
Well, that sounds like just hope.
Well, I mean, there are a lot of people that are doing it just for fun. It's becoming like more of a hobby.
Sure.
So until they figure out what the real cause is, that's really what we
do. Do you have any insights into that? Do you suspect anything?
I mean, you know, definitely weather. Like, I don't know how was everybody's garden last year, if any of you guys garden, but it was awfully cold.
Yeah, there was a lot of up and down temperature, too, during the wintertime, which is historically not typical in these last few winters, or probably in the last 30 years, the winters have become way more erratic.
Yeah.
And I imagine for a bee colony, that could be quite devastating if it gets cold so quickly.
Uh-huh.
My assumption is that the bees get into like a little ball and they flap their wings and keep each other warm when it's cold. But so if it's 20 degrees today and then tomorrow it's 70 degrees,
right?
Very
confusing. I'm confused. I don't know what to wear. I don't know what to do. So it's got to be the same for them. Aside from the fact that if the summer isn't really bright and there's not a lot of blooms, there's not enough for them to forage.
Right.
So if they don't have enough forage, then they go into the winter without the strength that they need to make it through.
I have a question, if I may. Because honey is a sterile, it's like the only sterile food, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the fact that we have so so many antibacterial elements in our world now on the planet, not just in our food and that we take, but I mean our environment has been totally changed. It's made sterile, but it also makes us more susceptible to infections and things like that, or more resistant.
Right.
Do you think that somehow that affects the bees? I mean, what is it about the bees that they actually make this sterile substance?
Yeah, I don't know, and I don't know. I'd love to actually learn more, you know, see what kind of research is really out there in terms of the bee issue. I'm not super educated about it, but I think it's just like beekeeping. If you ask 10 beekeepers the same question, you'll get like 100 answers.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody does things differently. Everybody has a different opinion. So it's really, it's nature, and it's very hard to know why something's happening.
It's interesting. What you're doing is you're creating packaging a sterile food product, and Seth, what you create has everything to do with bacteria.
It's true, yeah. I mean, the way I think about the two of us as guests is that if you don't have bacteria in the world and you don't have bees, pretty much it would be hard to live. I mean, these two things are pretty important. I mean, many people, if they don't know much about pollination, they think of bees as a producer of honey. But to state the obvious, bees are important to life, because if it weren't for bees, we wouldn't have a food supply. And I think sauerkraut and lacto-fermented vegetables, it's a different story, but we are learning more and more that live bacteria in the gut flora is very important. Certain bacteria are really important, and honey isn't a good example of sterile food. There's a lot of mass marketed food that's sterile. And I think that that, you know, something like sauerkraut sort of will help combat against a lot of the manufactured food that, evolutionarily speaking, we're not really meant to eat.
Mm-hmm. I meant sterile in a different
sense. No. I wasn't trying to argue. It's just interesting to think of honey as a sterile food, because I think of raw honey as a real life.
I consume honey every day for medicinal purposes. Uh-huh. I'm a huge consumer of honey.
I should probably also say that my father kept bees on our roof in Queens, New York for about 20 years when I was growing up.
Before it was like trendy.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even know if it was legal back then. Yeah. And then he found out later that this was actually a kind of a subculture of people who kept bees on their roof.
Right. And pigeons.
Pigeons, yeah. That's really neat. I didn't know that people did that back then.
Yeah, I mean, this was in the 80s that he had bees up there.
I've seen it on roofs. I lived up very high in a building, and then I could see people's roofs and things. You see what's going on. A lot of the activity in New York City does take place high up.
That's true.
It's good. It's not really, you know, the street level is one thing, but when you get up high, so it's a vertical situation. The higher up you go, the higher up you go. People are welcome to come down to the Catskill Library and join us on this show and meet these two wonderful people that are making sauerkraut and honey. I mean, how much better can you get than that? And if you want to make a donation, it's 518-697-7400 or online, wgxc.org/donate. I'll say the phone number again slowly. 518-697-7400. Donations are tax deductible. What else can we say about that, Neva?
Well, that we, if you appreciate programs like Eating It in the Hudson Valley, which is a very unique program and very, very necessary program, as you can hear by the subject matter, and every month this subject matter is equally important. If this is important to you, hearing this information is valuable to you, then please consider, if you haven't already made your tax-deductible donation to WGXC, please consider doing that today, right now, during this broadcast, until 3 p.m.
You know, I had a friend who would price everything he made so that it added up to the number 7. So in honor of Lou, who passed away several years ago, if you would like to make a pledge, adding up to the number 7, we've got $43, $34, $25, $52, $32.20, $61. Any variation on that? Any mathematicians out there who want to just, you know, diddle with the numbers? Go right ahead. We also have a premium today, which is the cookbook, which that is not out on the shelves yet. It doesn't come out till June 19th. It's called The Kitchen Shortcut Bible, and it's got more than 200 recipes to make real food fast. And you will get this book as a gift for a pledge of $50.
So being in the kitchen is a religious experience for you, you might want this particular Bible.
Bible, yeah.
A $50 pledge. Only here, right here on WGXC 90.7 FM.
I'm going to open up the index and see what it says about sauerkraut and honey. We did find the cabbage. Oh, here, slaw soup. No, nothing in here. Corned beef stuffed with something. And then there was something on honey that we found that you
There's
liked.
There's a whole section. It's a beautiful book.
It is. It is. What's beautiful about it?
It just seems really...
What strikes you?
I like the way they have the little sections, like it had the listing, you know, honey, and then all the different things, ways you could use it. So it's got a lot more substance than a regular cookbook with just a recipe here and a recipe there.
Page 183 tells us about honey.
But of course, I like to read cookbooks.
Yes.
So, you know, that's not everybody's favorite reading material.
Well, a lot of people do. And you know what I found out recently? Someone who works in prisons, the prisoners are at the most books that they request, cookbooks. you want to send cookbooks to prisoners, I've been sending a few. I have an excess of the library. And here, this one shows orange blossom honey, buckwheat honey, single-flowered honeys like eucalyptus or star thistle, herb honeys, and tree honeys from oaks and chestnuts. We don't get that around here. We get chestnut honey from Italy because we don't have chestnut trees. And then here,
just recently tasted, last year or 2 years ago, at the garlic festival of all places.
Yeah, garlic honey?
No, I got chestnut honey. I had never tried it before.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's
I just tasted avocado honey last week.
Seriously?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, from avocado orchards. So if the bees are working the avocado orchard.
But how do you know, like, where the bees go to have their lunch?
I mean, when it's a farm with several acres and acres of one thing, they do, like, a two-mile radius traditionally.
Oh.
So I guess that's how you know they're mostly working avocado.
Avocado.
And it definitely had, like, this really unique taste.
Was it green?
No.
No,
But it was really buttery.
Uh-huh.
It was really nice.
Rich. Very rich. I think you pointed out the grilled cheese.
Yeah,
put some honey,
smear
it on the inside of the bread, particularly with sharp cheddar or goat cheese. That's nice. A grilled cheese and honey sandwich. Should we throw some
sauerkraut? Sounds good to me. Yeah.
Throw some sauerkraut on it? Well, maybe. Well, it could be. Let's see. What do we throw sauerkraut on?
I do make a kimchi, which, you know, that might, a little bit of sweetness with kimchi could be pretty
What
nice.
Else do you make? What are the other flavors?
I make one with red cabbage, apples, garlic, and onions.
Oh, that's a nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a traditional one with caraway seeds and juniper berries.
Where's your brand sold?
My wife has a shop called Flower Kraut,
yes.
a play on words,
yes,
on Warren Street in Hudson, and we carry the full line of sauerkraut.
What's the address?
722 Warren Street, up by the 7th Street Park.
Oh, nice. I've got to get over
and
there.
And it's available in Catterskill here in Catskill, and I believe Mother Earth's, and there's a number of health food stores in the Hudson Valley that carry it.
Yeah. Nice.
Mansion and Reed up in Coxsackie,
What's
it's a
that?
Small boutique that carries some food products.
Right. And if anyone is listening and you've got a local food product you'd like to come and talk about and see if people like it, please get in touch. You can go to the Facebook page for Eating It in the Hudson Valley. Actually, go and like the page. And you can ask questions on there, too. And ask questions of our guests, and I'm sure they'd be glad to go on it. And I'd like both of you to like the page so
of
you're
course.
On it and, you know, getting the information coming out.
Already.
You might have done it already.
Yeah,
I always ask people to please do that. That's the only the only thing I ask of my guests is just like the Facebook page. You don't even have to look at it. where should we go to here? Okay, a minute later. Seth, you have a song that we
My group, the Wyos, recorded a song called Sauerkraut. It's kind of a vaudeville comedy number, you could say.
Can I play it?
Sure.
I'm going to play it. The mics will still be on. So.
A short order cook on his elbows lean. 8 hours into his shift, his face was torn and mean. Where the doorbell jingled as his eyes met hers. She was a tall glass of water, she was dressed in fur. She sat at the counter and ordered a plate ahead. With two dead eyes in the middle, took a coffee flask. Then she pulled out a glass jar from her bosom and said, "Man, this ain't no baby's milk. It's lacto-fermented. She's my baby, it ain't no doubt. She can't get enough of that sauerkraut. Eats it raw with acid trout. If she can't get it, she does pap. Kimchi, cabbage, red or green, the kind that's favored by Andy Bean. It keeps his hair a shiny sheen, and it keeps the stomach clean. Has a taste so captivating, sweeter than the Lorelei.
but the smell is rather grating, like raw compost in July.
She likes to dip burritos in mojitos, never eats burritos, keeps away the mosquitoes, in a Frenchman's delight as a snack or a bite, on a mountain high up, or a Scottish fry up.
Sour pickles were always in her purse, she breaks them out, not only for the burst, but for every occasion to nosh.
She forks it from a jar.
She's well stocked and crouched. She always has a spare. Just take a peek inside her Frigidaire. There's a flavor for every affair. She's my baby, it ain't no doubt. She can't get enough of that sauerkraut.
Thank you, Seth.
Just a note, that song was recorded right here in Catskill at Old Soul Studios on West Main Street, so you could literally walk to the studio from here.
Hey.
Just a random piece of information.
So local music, local food.
Local studios, yeah.
And the group is the Wyos?
The Wyos, yeah.
You still play with them? Where do you play?
We're doing a bunch of dates in Maine at the end of this month.
Maine.
And at
where
the end,
Maine?
We're playing the Ossipee Music Festival in Hiram, Maine in the end of July.
Oh.
But we've got a date up in Belfast and also outside of Portland.
Nice.
Coming
nice.
Up in July.
Yeah, Portland. I like it up there in Maine. Hey, it's our Radio Everywhere Spring Pledge Drive. Go to the phone and dial 518-697-7400 or go online to wgxc.org/donate and pledge your support. This is Phyllis Segura, and the program is Eating It in the Hudson Valley, and I am speaking with Seth. You don't call yourself Sauerkraut Seth.
Sauerkraut Seth, yeah. That it's easier to pronounce than my last name.
Oh, all right. And Rebecca, whose last name I keep forgetting?
Shim.
Shim from Phoenicia Honey. S-H-I-M?
Yes.
S-H-I-M. S-H-I-M. Good. Got it. Shim, where does that come from? We don't know.
It's my husband is part Chinese.
Oh.
But I've been told that it's a Korean name.
Oh,
so
okay.
Go figure.
Go figure, north or south these days. We don't care.
Don't know.
I don't even want to know what's going on over there. I am also going to review a cookbook today, and we're going to have the food report part of it. But first, before I get into any of that, we just really have to say a couple of words about Anthony Bourdain, who just did himself in, really. And his dates are 1956 to 2018, and he's now amongst the immortals. When people die so young and they've done something, they remain that age forever, like Marilyn Monroe, when we just think of them that way. We know who he is, and here's a brief quote defining only a part of his character and influence that I found. In an assessment of Bourdain's life for The Nation, David Clion theorizes that Bourdain understood that the point of journalism is to tell the truth, to challenge the powerful, to expose wrongdoing. But his unique gift was to make doing all that look fun rather than grim or tedious. According to Clion, Bourdain's shows made it possible to believe that social justice and earthly delights weren't mutually exclusive, and he pursued both with the same earnest reverence. I've got chills.
So sad.
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing personality.
Yeah.
Really brilliant.
You don't know what goes on in people's heads, do we? I know. Anyway, I felt like we needed to honor that on this show. And actually, I got a phone call. My friend woke me up. My friend Ida woke me up one day. She never calls me early in the morning, and she woke me up, and she was a big fan of his. And she said, "Anthony," you know, I said, "What are you talking about?" It was like groggy. And she just filled me in right away. The book that I am going to review today is called The Fruit Forager's Companion, written by Sarah Beer, B-I-R. And the book is very much fun. There's lots of fruits that we don't have around here or can't find, but I did find a few, and I'm going to point out something. And Seth knows a few fruits that grow around. I've been encouraging permaculture since our permaculture show, and I hope to have those people back on. And I'd like to try to encourage people trying to get permaculture, that is, fruits in the parks, fruit trees growing in the parks as much as possible so people can pick them and they can forage. And that's what they would be there for. Sometimes the forces that be say, "Oh well, if we plant trees in the park that fruit, people will pick them." Yeah, that's the point. That's the whole idea. But one thing that I've noticed around here, well, first there's mulberries, and they grow all over the place, and they come out probably by the end of June. It's been a little cool. Usually they're out by now, and they just fill up, and they start dropping all over the place. And obvious to me, people don't know what to do with them because they're on the ground, and it's all purple all over the place. I've lived around a few of them. I used to live in Piermont, New York, where years ago there was a silk factory. I think they made gloves. So they planted a lot of mulberries to feed the silkworms. So I used to pick them. You go out on the pier out there, and they just grow all over the place. And I used to put a sheet out. Just wait a couple of hours, they all fall down, pick up the sheet, go home, make some jam.
I tried to, well, maybe it was because I grew up in Queens, New York, but when I would try to take the mulberries home, they would spoil pretty quickly. I mean, within hours. But maybe it was just the trees that grew there. I could eat them right off the tree, but then later on, they just seemed to go bad for some reason.
Oh, no, I never experienced that. The purple ones or the white ones?
The purple ones.
The purple ones. Yeah, they grow all over the place
here. Yeah, mostly up and down the river. I think once you get out to the eastern part of Columbia County and the western part of Greene County, they disappear because it's quite warm toward the river. So I think they're kind of a warmer climate tree.
And where were you finding them in Queens?
I grew up in a village called Laurelton, and they grew right over the highway overpass. So that's maybe
very cool.
Yeah,
I'm from Brooklyn, and I don't remember picking much food.
You don't remember anything, any kind of fruits growing anywhere.
No. Hmm. No.
Well, the other one that's around here is sumac. You've seen sumac?
Oh, sure.
All right? And it's those bunches of berries, and you know, people confuse it with, oh, is that poison sumac? But no, it's not. And it does grow all over the place. And let me see what I wrote about it.
I know you can do like a lemonade, right?
Yeah. You just, that's just a Native American thing. You actually, it's called sumacade. And you just steep it in clusters in cold water, not warm water. But every year I want to go out and pick some sumac. And every year now this book gave some really good instructions about how to pick it. So everybody watch out. If you're driving behind me and I make a quick swerve when I see some, watch out. But you can pull in behind me and we can both pick them. But they're not exactly the same as the Middle Eastern sumac that you can buy, because the stuff that grows is a little bit more subtle. And it's described as like fruity and tart, but Beer says it's not lemony, but that's sort of the direction that it goes in.
Now, can you eat them like a berry, or do you
I don't know. A lot of people use it as a salt substitute, but it's got a seed in it. So what she actually says in this book is to grind it in a processor and then strain it so you get the little seeds out. She said some people like the seeds. And I really like this book. There's a couple of recipes for everything. Here's one where she found Asian pears. I don't know if we can forage pears, but, you know, that's here, and she tells you how to harvest them, and she described the Asian pear, and then there's a nice recipe for arugula pear and an almond pizza, and an Asian pear and roasted poblano salsa, and then I've got some things marked off here. Let's see what that is. Oh, a mulberry strawberry shrub. Shrubs are really popular in the Hudson Valley, right? Have you had shrubs?
Oh, yeah. We drink it with seltzer sometimes in my household.
You do?
Yeah.
What do you do?
Just add a little bit to some sparkling water and a little ice.
And is a shrub fermented with sugar and vinegar?
I don't think it's fermented. I believe there is. Some shrubs have raw vinegar in them, but it's not a fermented product.
But do you think you could make one live just for, to get the extra probiotic?
That's a good question.
Especially since they're so trendy right now.
Yeah.
Everybody likes them.
I don't know.
Food for thought.
She says they originated as a way to utilize the abundance of seasonal fruit crops in the days before refrigeration or canning. Fruit and sugar were fermented together to make a slightly sour drink. Nowadays, the common technique is to skip the fermentation. So they did. They used to ferment it. And instead, add vinegar. You don't want to use harsh, distilled white vinegar in a shrub. Softer, less acidic vinegars like champagne vinegar, rice wine vinegar, or most any fruit vinegar works well. Mulberries, there we have that again, impart a dark, jammy color and cut the cloying brightness of other fruits. She says she prefers to mix berries while making shrubs. Strawberries are around when mulberries are ready to harvest. And see, that's it. The seasons are kind of off right now. Can vary so much from tree to tree. Your shrub will always be on target. The glory of shrubs is that you can easily tinker with the sugar and vinegar levels to make a drink that's just to your taste. So it's a sweet and sour thing. Sounds real Eastern European. I'm sure that they made that a lot.
It is also medicinal. Did she mention that?
No. How is it medicinal?
Well, like some cultures will drink cider vinegar every day.
Right.
Have you ever heard of Hudson Standard?
I've seen it. Yeah.
I'm sure, she would be a great guest. But she has a whole, somehow at markets we end up next to each other a lot.
Right.
And I don't really remember her whole spiel about shrubs. But I know that they recommend taking a little bit every day.
Every day. Yeah.
You would take cider vinegar.
Yeah, I've been told that too. Okay, we're on to shrubs. Let's all, with Hudson Valley shrubs.
A related drink, bringing it back to honey, is, I believe it's called switchel. Maybe I'm pronouncing it incorrectly, I believe it's a mixture of apple cider vinegar and raw honey.
Maybe it's the switchels that she, touts as like a good daily thing.
Yeah.
But I think they both have benefit.
Seth, what are the berries that you saw growing around here that are edible?
You have blackberries here. You have these raspberries, wild raspberries. And then I think they're called wineberries. They look like a raspberry bush, but the leaf is a little different. And the flower is quite vibrant. You'll notice the flowers. And I don't know if they've started blooming yet. I often go running behind the Hudson High School. There's kind of an old cross-country track, and I keep my eye on those. They grow there. But nevertheless, there are a lot of brambles. And once you go, I used to live in more eastern Columbia County. There are black caps there, which are those little sweet blackberries. They're really excellent.
Is that what I think is like a black raspberry?
There are bigger black raspberries, and then there are these tiny little ones that are just circular. They're not so oval.
Yeah, and they're not around every year. Like, they come one year at my house, and they're prolific.
Yeah.
And then they're gone. This year we had incredible little wild strawberries. It's a lot like a real labor of love, but I have a 10-year-old and he has fun with it, and we kind of crawl around.
So the idea is really just start looking around and finding things and pick up a couple of books about foraging. This one has some really good pictures, and I know Dina Falcone with her book has a lot of those things, and she gives talks and walks. And here in this book, she says, I started foraging because I'm nosy and cheap. I like free things, and I like to look at property that does not belong to me and imagine what goes on there. The book is in this character. Do not do this long enough, and you will notice different types of fruit growing, some of it free for the taking. I noticed the fruit, and I took it. So foraging.
Being a traveling musician, I've had the privilege of going exotic places. Well, maybe California is not exotic, but I was quite impressed that in California there are random municipal citrus trees just on the side of the street. I've gone blackberry and raspberry picking in Ireland, which is always a nice sort of respite from being in a van. So
foraging is
definitely a passion of mine.
Oh, good. And in Santa Barbara, their olive trees are along the sidewalks.
Oh, wow.
So you could just pick up the olives and then, you know, create, you put them in salt and you I forget the word. I'm looking for the word. What you
cure
do.
Them?
Cure
maybe?
Them. Thank you, Seth. Seth gives words as well as sauerkraut. Put some words in that sauerkraut. And this is our Radio Everywhere Spring Pledge Drive. And if you like this show, and even if you don't, give us a donation at 518-697-7400 or online at wgxc.org/donate.
And you're listening to Eating It in the Hudson Valley with none other than Phyllis Segura.
Hey.
Hey.
Hey. Hey. Who recently did a cooking demonstration at the Saugerties Market, and then they reported, somebody said, oh, you're on the front page of the Saugerties Times. They said, oh, I got to go get a copy. And so they gave the name of the show all wrong.
Oh, no.
I asked them to make a correction. Yeah, but I don't know if they made a correction or not, you know, so we don't know.
How did they identify the show?
With a different name.
The wrong name.
Yeah, wrong name.
What did you cook?
Oh, I made, there was fish. So I wanted to make it really simple. And I said, well, let's boil some water. Well, that's where the problem started. You know, you think simple, right? As soon as you think simple, things get very complicated. And there, it was the first farmer's market of the season. And they had purchased some induction burners. Well, nobody could, if three guys, nobody could figure out how to work it.
Probably had the wrong pot.
No, it wasn't the pot. No, that wasn't the problem. It was just getting the induction burner to go on because it's all digital.
Right.
So these three guys and me, I couldn't figure it out. You know, I like numbers. You turn the knob and it's on.
I use induction for my honeys.
Induction is great.
I love it because it keeps the honey warm. Like, we warm water underneath the honey.
Right.
So that we can preserve all the properties of the honey.
Mm-hmm.
And the induction is so, you know, specific. But I still don't really know how to work it. Just put it on one.
Put it on. Well, no, induction is really good. It's more popular in Europe than it is here. And many years ago, I used to do demonstrations for induction, high-end ovens, you know, starting in the 20,000s. And there was one that was a wok induction. And you put the wok
nice.
In, and then, like, boom, that thing got hot. And you cooked really, really fast. It was beautiful. And Daniel Balut has his whole kitchen with induction so that things stay cool. He had enough money to do a really gorgeous kitchen.
Well, when I had my
kitchen.
Restaurant in Brooklyn, across from Brooklyn Academy of Music, it's like a long time ago.
Yes.
About 15 years
ago. You had
ago.
An induction kitchen?
We did all induction
wow.
and electric because we didn't need, you know, to avoid an Ansel system.
Uh-huh.
Because you don't need a vent with induction.
Well, you were ahead of the curve. That was good. It didn't cost you more then? To do that?
No, because the Ansel system in New York City building, it's the hood that the fire department requires, the ventilation, and you have to go up like X number of feet,
right.
you know, to meet code, and those are like $30,000. Mm. So no, the induction was actually much cheaper for
and
us.
It keeps the heat down in the kitchen,
yes.
too.
Yeah.
Everybody doesn't,
yeah,
you know,
you get nice,
cook.
It's really nice for sautéing.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. So what was I saying?
You were cooking fish in the Saugerties Market.
Oh, you asked
market.
Me what I made. Sorry. Thank you very much. So finally, they went and they got a butane burner. So we had, you know, then the water eventually boiled. There was a wind. I didn't think it was going to boil. Anyway, I like cooking fish in parchment. That's one of the best ways to do it. You just steam the fish. You know, you take some parchment. You make like a heart shape or whatever you're happy with. You put some fish in. You put some other stuff in, some lemon, some wine, some herbs, a couple of vegetables. Roll it together, seal it up, put it in a steamer. And like 8 minutes later, you actually have one of the best things you've ever eaten.
Yep.
I mean, that, you know, if you want a little perk it up, then make some kind of olive tapenade or something spicy to have with it. But you really don't need it. It's clean. It's pure. You get the taste right out, and it's made in no time. You could take a bunch of packets. You could have a dinner party that way. Just prep it up. Steam it all. You can do that in an oven then. If you have more than, you know, four, you just make some kind of water thing, and you can figure that out and put it in the oven so it steams, and you cover it, and then you put the packet, you don't open the packet, you put it on your guest plates, and it kind of puffs up, and everybody opens it up, and the steam comes out, and the nice smells come out, and everybody's drinking white wine, and everybody's very happy. Try that for your next dinner party.
That's one of my favorites.
Cooking that way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, right?
We did that in cooking school. But that's like a very traditional French.
That's where I learned it in France. Yes.
Well, I learned it in Soho at the French Culinary Institute.
Nobody does it here.
One of my favorite things. Yeah. Why?
Yeah. Yeah. But because it's too simple. Everybody says, "How do you cook fish?" We just steam it a little. And it just doesn't gel. And some people were watching this, you know, I came back after it was done, and I said, "Well, it's really simple." And the guy said, "Well, you make it look simple." I said, no, honey, it's really simple.
I mean, the hardest part is rolling the little
That's thing up. Hard, yeah. And I've seen it lately with staples, you know. It's tricky, you know, when you're opening it up, you don't want the staples. But if you really can't do it, and you could use aluminum foil. If you wanted to, you could use aluminum foil.
And maybe wrap it. Put the fish in the parchment and then wrap it with foil, so you're not
double trouble.
The fish right on the.
Why not? I'm going to hit a little bit of the food report. Wait, we've got more music here to do. Let's see if we have time for that. Now, let me do a little food report and see how far we can go. I'm not going to do the whole food report because if anybody's listened to this before, you know that I put it on the Facebook page. You just go in the notes and do that. But there are some things that you should know right now. There are some foods you should not eat. Okay, ready? Rhubarb leaves. They have a high level of oxalic acid and can cause kidney damage. Spinach also has oxalic acid, but much less. However, it would take a 140-pound person to eat about 10 pounds of leaves to die, but a small amount can still make you sick. And recently at Adams Market, I saw rhubarb being sold with large leaves at the ends. Cut them off or ask them to do so. Don't pay for the leaves and certainly don't eat them. Okay? When you see them, don't eat rhubarb leaves. The other thing not to eat is raw red kidney beans. They contain a natural toxin called lectins. Soak the beans at least 5 hours before cooking. Eating as few as 4 or 5 raw red beans can cause extreme nausea, vomiting, and upset stomach. I wouldn't want to try it. Then green potatoes. There's often a question about green potatoes, and you see them in the market. They're not all green, but like right under the skin, and it's called solanine, S-O-L-A-N-I-N-E, which is a natural glycoalkaloid. I didn't look that up, so I don't know what that is. But it can occur when potatoes are exposed to too much light. Green color is just under the skin, suggesting that there's a toxic buildup in there, and cut it away before cooking. But if the layer is bright green just under the skin, don't eat it. Don't consume it. Avoid this by storing potatoes in a dark, cool place. Hot tips from eating it in the Hudson Valley, or eating it anywhere, or not eating them. That's basically it. We've got the farm bill happening, but this is the latest one. Remember the thing about hemp, which is Mitch McConnell's signature cause? Yes, you read that right. Mitch McConnell. It was brought up recently when they asked the guy posing as president of the U.S. if he was for the bill. Hemp farmers would be eligible for crop insurance, and hemp would be removed from the list of controlled substances and states given authority to regulate. That's the bill that's on the table now. It's part of the farm bill. They're finally buckling to the big biz potential here. No surprises when you see the Marlboro Man fetish figure that he once was having a toke out in the prairie while rounding up wild horses while the ghost of Marilyn Monroe weeps, and so do we. We weep.
I was actually making sauerkraut on a farm called Old Mud Creek Farm, and they were one of 4 farms in New York State that was allowed to grow hemp. Mm-hmm. I believe for CBD oil, is that?
No, because I thought about growing hemp for a while, and then when I looked into it, I thought it was totally illegal in the States? Like a special license?
I believe there are
some places that are licensed to do it.
In New York State, yeah.
But hemp, and they're talking about hemp, but they really mean marijuana.
Oh, well, that's a whole other thing.
Because if it's off the list of controlled substances, and you can grow, you can't just grow it without the THC. The THC is in there. So I take CBD oil.
Right.
And that doesn't have any THC.
Right.
You get nothing. But you get dependent on it. It's not addictive, but it does help.
Interesting.
But it's sort of on the edge. But Mitch McConnell supporting this bill, and then, what's his name, saying, I think I'm going to sign it as the reporters going on the plane.
Yeah, I believe that Mitch McConnell was very, very against marijuana.
Yeah, I thought it was
right?
really hemp
yeah.
that they're talking about, because hemp has like a teeny tiny bit of THC in it.
Yeah, so but it's just used for making paper and cotton and things. Yeah, it's completely different. But it is called the hemp bill, but hemp farmers could get crop insurance.
I imagine they must have grown a lot of hemp in the Hudson Valley back in the day, because there's a whole alley in Hudson called Rope Alley, and they used to make ropes.
Right.
I believe they went on ships, but it was quite an industry back in the day.
Well, it looks like marijuana, so the...
Oh, sure, yeah.
It doesn't look any different at all, just that the THC is kind of out of it. But they have been comparing versions of the Farm Bill from the House and Senate, and it's more than 1,000 pages, and it's still being decided. The Senate put forth no major changes in the SNAP requirements, so they'll have to argue it out because the House has it in. The Senate mandates funding the organic research program with a permanent base, and dairy farms are given $100 million protection for milk products, and they renamed it the Dairy Risk Coverage Program. So we get a lot going on here. Salmonella is still a big problem, found in chicks and ducklings from multiple hatcheries. And we've got 4 minutes to go. And you can read the rest of this report on the Facebook page. And believe me, there's four pages of stuff here. And the most important thing is that the non-organic strawberries have topped the Dirty Dozen list for 3 years. So conventionally grown strawberries contain an average of 7.8 different pesticides per sample, almost four times the average of other products. And you can read all about that, and please do, because you need to know this. I pour over this stuff so that you don't have to read it, and you can just read what I write. Seth, Rebecca, thank you. And what are we going to do here? We're going to give the phone number one more time. 518-697-7400. We're working hard here for you. Eating It in the Hudson Valley is doing its work and sifting information out for you so that you don't have to do it. Read about what's good about food. Help grow fruit trees all over the place and live well and prosper. This is WGXC. Send your money care of Wave Farm, 5662 Route 23, Accra, New York, 12405. We love you, and we are going out.
The world is just a great